Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases the stories and radio productions from this and many other community stations across the country. I'm Dori Smith of WHUS in Storrs, Connecticut. As Mexico's Vicente Fox reaches the end of his term, the government is facing a growing challenge from a popular movement. Our topic this time is Oaxaca. For more than 4 months, the capital city of the Mexican state of Oaxaca has been at the center of a broad citizens' movement to remove the governor. What began as a routine strike by public school teachers has since expanded to the dimensions of an anti-government uprising. FSRN's Shannon Young brings us an overview of the volatile situation brewing in southern Mexico.
It's impossible to walk even a few blocks in the downtown area of Oaxaca City without seeing signs of a barricade. The colonial buildings of the once famous tourist destination are covered in graffiti and wheat-paste posters. Protest encampments occupy the central plaza and block the entrances to several key government buildings. It's been months since uniformed police have patrolled the downtown area. Oaxaca is now more than 135 days deep into a popular uprising to remove Governor Ulises Ruiz, who has been widely accused of corruption and authoritarianism. Most major state and municipal government offices in the capital have been blockaded by public school teachers and members of the so-called Popular Assembly of the People of Oaxaca, or APO as it's known in Spanish. Popular discontent had been brewing in this southern Mexican state for quite some time, but what sparked the current political crisis was a state government crackdown on striking school teachers. The teachers began their strike on May 22nd to demand a raise, better working conditions, and an increase in funding for the state's public schools. They set up a massive tent city encampment in Oaxaca City's historic center. Talks with the state government broke down, and on June 14th, the governor sent in police to forcibly remove the strikers. Teachers and downtown residents alike were on the receiving end of tear gas and concussion grenades thrown from a circling helicopter. The June 14th police operation was the spark that ignited the movement to oust the governor. Governor Ulises Ruiz belongs to the PRI, a party that dominated Mexican politics at the federal level for over 7 decades, until the electoral victory of President Vicente Fox in 2000. The PRI has held uninterrupted power in Oaxaca since 1929. Many here believe that Ulises Ruiz stole the gubernatorial election. Despite protests calling for a review of the election, Ulises Ruiz was sworn in as governor on December 1st of 2004. In less than 2 years of office, Ruiz has made himself tremendously unpopular due to lack of transparency and heavy-handed tactics against critics of his administration. The conflict in Oaxaca has reached the proportions of a popular rebellion due to the governor's refusal to resign and the apparent lack of political will on the part of the federal government to initiate impeachment proceedings. Gisela, a middle school teacher who is also a member of the APO, says that even though the federal and state governments are from different parties, the federal government does not see a benefit to intervening in the crisis.
Pues simplemente porque es el mismo sistema.
Simply because it is the same system. For them, it's not possible for the people to rise up and impose their own will. We know that at the national level, there was an electoral fraud. At the national level, there's a situation that is preventing the government from maintaining control. In many places, but especially in Oaxaca, the country is really a disaster. They can't control it. So the fact that in one state, the people have risen up to overthrow a governor, for them, it's no good. Because where does that leave their authority?
The failure of politicians to act in favor of the popular clamor in Oaxaca has led many here to give up on party politics altogether. Why trust a system that imposes rulers without investigating allegations of electoral fraud? Why put faith in leaders who consistently act against overwhelming shows of popular will? These are just some of the sentiments that led to the formation of the Popular Assembly of the People of Oaxaca, the body that has declared itself to be the legitimate governing body of the state. It is based on a direct democracy model of assembly meetings, the favored method of government in Oaxaca's numerous indigenous communities. Despite an ongoing media offensive that portrays its members as out-of-control radicals, APO continues to gain shows of support, like this woman who called from San Diego, California, to speak over the airwaves of a Oaxaca City commercial radio station protesters have occupied since August 21st.
We are aware that this struggle is just beginning and that Oaxaca is in a unique and transcendental moment in its history. This is why we, as Oaxacans living in the United States, are openly supporting this noble movement. We have even already formed an APO California in the United States.
The federal government has so far done little to act on the central issue of removing the governor. But President Vicente Fox has promised that his government will resolve the situation before he leaves office at the end of November. In the meantime, the movement in Oaxaca shows no sign of letting up, even though rumors persist that a crackdown is coming soon. This Oaxaca City nursery school teacher, who did not want to give her name, spoke about the general tension in the protest encampments in light of recent military overflights and troop movements within the state.
Yes, we're scared. But we don't care because if the federal police come in or the Marines come in like they are already saying, let them come. It doesn't matter because if they come and they attack us or carry out some strong act of provocation against us, this is only going to get bigger. If they don't resolve this, it's going to grow and there will be problems. We are not going to just accept whatever they do to us. It's going to extend further to the national level.
This sentiment is widely shared by many in the protest encampments. A famous quote by Mexican revolutionary hero Emiliano Zapata can be seen graffitied on a number of walls here. It's better to die on your feet than to live on your knees. Although teachers have not even received strike wages for over 6 weeks, they still stand guard at blockaded government buildings. Neighborhood residents come out at night to serve coffee to protesters manning the local barricades. Despite inconveniences caused by the ongoing conflict, anti-government sentiment remains high, and the popular movement shows no sign of relenting. They insist the only way for Oaxaca to return to normal is for the governor to leave office. Reporting from Oaxaca, Mexico, for Sprouts, I'm Shannon Young.
In the U.S., groups supporting the people of Oaxaca have been protesting in Fresno, San Diego, Santa Rosa, and Los Angeles, California. Rodelia Romero, coordinator of the Indigenous Binational Frente, spoke to us by phone as she participated in a demonstration at the Mexican Consulate in L.A.
My name is Rodelia Romero. I'm the coordinator for the Indigenous Binational Front.
Now, you are working in coordination with various groups, and right now you're at a demonstration. Why don't you tell me what's going on?
What's going on right now, we are at a rally at the Mexican Consulate in support of our home state, which is the state of Oaxaca. We're on a binational organization, so one of our offices is also doing an action in Fresno, San Diego, Santa Maria, and Los Angeles.
Have you been trying to get access to someone at the embassy there to talk with you about what's going on in Oaxaca?
We've just sent them a letter.
Tell me a little bit more about your group. What kinds of things do you do?
We're a human rights organization for indigenous migrants. We do a lot of health workshops, human rights for indigenous people, and basically culture workshops about our background and stuff.
Are you kind of a support community?
Yes, we are a support community. We do a lot of translation for indigenous people.
And so, Rodelia Romero, what's life like for those of you who are trying to maintain contact between California and Mexico at this politically volatile time?
It's hard. We lose a lot of night sleep, but that's a work that has to be done for social justice, not only for indigenous people, but for people in general, just basic human rights. That's what we're asking for. And it's a struggle, and it's hard on everybody in the organization because we have to handle different matters from translation to help to courts, schools. So it's being the coordinator of an organization like this is quite a handful.
We've heard there were some very tense moments for those thousands of people who had walked for 21 days from Oaxaca to Mexico City, demanding that the governor leave. They were able to enter the city and do more of what they wanted to do, essentially. What have you been hearing from Oaxaca?
Well, it's been, well, the teachers, the people of Oaxaca are a very peaceful community, and they've just been working, calling on attention of people by demonstrations, by sit-ins, in Oaxaca, in Mexico City, and now here in California. We're just trying to do these peaceful demonstrations. I left your question there for a few seconds.
Okay. Well, it's difficult to get press about what's going on in Oaxaca. It's one of those parts of Mexico that has not been getting coverage. Would you like to tell the story about Oaxaca from your point of view and what you know about what some of the demands are that people want both politically and socially?
We just want to end the poverty that Oaxaca has had for 515 years, the political abuses, the caciquismo. We want basic human rights, like being able to go to school, being able to have health services, just being able to live in peace without being harassed. I mean, it's 550 years of harassment. The people of Oaxaca have never stopped struggling to get just basic human rights, like school, like food, like electricity, potable water. That's what the struggle is. There's an emphasis on what the teachers right now, but it's to prevent the privatization of school. And again, today is Oaxaca. Tomorrow will be the U.S. as schools are privatized, and the poor people will not be able to afford that. So this goes beyond the Oaxacan struggle. It's the demand for human rights. The violence since Ruiz Ortiz has been there, it's gotten more violent than ever, and he's killed a few people, and I'm sure you've read about it through the human rights report. Women disappeared. There's a lot of people in the press that Noticias, La Cara, y Voz, Imagen de Oaxaca has been harassed.
Odilia Romero of the Binational Front of Indigenous Organizations. You're listening to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly news magazine produced by this community station and others like it across the country. We turn next to some of the international organizations that have been working in Oaxaca and the U.S., trying to call attention to those who are at risk in various parts of Mexico and while crossing the U.S. border. Pedro Rios is director of the San Diego office of the American Friends Service Committee. His office has been working closely on border issues over some 30 years, monitoring local law enforcement and documenting civil and human rights abuses. They have more recently expanded into more community-based organizing and leadership training, trying to build up networks of local human rights committees, helping groups and individuals to become human rights observers. I asked him to talk about what's going on in Oaxaca today in a more historical context.
It's difficult to talk about some of the recent motivations for the popular movement without putting it into context of, I guess, some of the more historical events that have taken place. And I think the more important one that I can point to is the trend towards a more neoliberal economic policies that were pressed upon by NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, that was an agreement between Canada, Mexico, and the United States, in which the proposed idea was that the Mexican economy would initially suffer and then at some point would produce sufficient jobs so that Mexicans would not find the need to have to migrate into the United States. And so 10 years after NAFTA, or 12 years now, it seems that the trend has just been a downhill spiral where there are more people that are economically depressed and there aren't as many opportunities for people to find jobs that will sustain their families. And given that situation, in terms of what's happening in Oaxaca, what we have seen is there has been an increase in the sorts of migrants that are coming from different municipalities in Oaxaca, where before the trend for the past 20, 25 years and perhaps more, it used to be that Mixtecos were known to migrate into the United States and in particular into the Central Valley like Fresno, Visalia, and those areas, as well as in the San Diego area, which I'm more aware of. It was a trend to migrate into the northern part of the county where people work in the agricultural fields. And in being in communication with some of the organizations there, it seems that there has been a trend to have newer groups of indigenous people who migrate from some of the less common regions of Oaxaca, like the Triquis, who are from the higher elevations and more remote areas that are finding their ways into cities such as San Diego and San Francisco. And so in some ways, the recent popular movements have to do with these sorts of economic policies where people don't have the capacity to live sustainable lives because in many ways their governments are involved in, the federal government as well as the local government are involved in policies that do not allow for this sort of sustainability. And in particular to the case of the APO, which is the Popular Assembly of Pueblos de Oaxaca, which would translate as, yes, of the peoples of Oaxaca, it seems that the situation is directly tied to the local governments of Ulises Gris Ortiz, which is seen as a very repressive government. And I don't know many of the particulars. What I do know is that there have been a number of human rights violations that have been reported by groups such as the FIOB, which is the Frente Indígena de Organizaciones Binacionales, or the Binational Front of Indigenous Organizations, which have actually documented not only cases of missing persons in direct result to their political affiliation, but also of cases of abuse, of women being sexually mistreated, and of other cases involving children, for example, who have also been mistreated. And these have been documented time and time again during the administration of this governor. And in recent occasions when the governor or representatives of the Oaxacan government have made their way into Los Angeles and to other areas of California, you know, these organizations have protested, and their protests really have gone in vain because the governor either decides to cancel the trip or essentially just does not provide a platform in which to engage in dialogue with organizations that are presenting the claims against the local Oaxacan government.
Talk about what you're seeing in California as indigenous Mexican organizations try to press for their rights here in the States and across the border in Mexico in solidarity with what may often be family members.
Just to give the example of this organization that I already mentioned, the FIOB. The FIOB has been in existence since 1991, I believe, and throughout California and throughout Mexico, they have 15,000 members, and it's really a unique organization because it's the first of its kind that's binational in nature and that has that large of a membership group. And so the politics and policies that are in play in southern Mexico, not only Oaxaca but also in Chiapas and in Guerrero, have a direct relationship to the communities of those people who have migrated to the U.S. or from those communities. And so what happens in the local governments in Oaxaca and the different municipalities has a direct relationship with people who are originally from Oaxaca and who find themselves in the United States and who have a direct connection to the people who are affected by those policies. And so it's no surprise that members of the FIOB and other organizations will plan a protest or a meeting with the Mexican consulates. At least two have been held in San Diego, for example, where letters were presented to the consular general in response to the situation in Oaxaca. And the letters primarily state the need for the Oaxacan government to not have a violent response to the situation that is happening there, especially because the group APO isn't necessarily instigating, but that's the way a lot of the more mainstream media is portraying the leadership of that organization. So it's an attempt to place pressure on the Mexican government from the outside and to also present the message that Mexicans who live abroad, those in particular in the United States, are directly connected to the families who are still in Oaxaca, and so the policies that impact people there also impact the people who live in the United States. And if we take a look at the buildup of the border militarization here in the United States, if we consider that in the past situation in Chiapas, for example, in the mid-90s when there was an uprising there, there was a large increase of indigenous migrants that came to the United States. And so the expectation is if there is a repressive response from the Mexican government as to the situation in Oaxaca, we're most likely going to see an increase of people migrating from Oaxaca to the U.S. And with the extent of the border militarization that we have now, it probably will not be any surprise to see an increase of people who are dying in the desert as they're trying to make their trek into the United States. What it boils down to is that the policies that impact people in Oaxaca have a direct relationship to the people who live here who are from those areas.
There are many people in America that are talking about immigration and these new laws here. Not that much conversation about the social situation in Mexico or the political situation there, as basically people exert their demands to control their government after having witnessed what they call unfair elections. This is going back to 2004 in the case of the governor. But do you find that there is more interest from international organizations other than the U.S.?
Yeah, I think for the U.S. government, it's convenient not to talk about the issues that perhaps might be affecting the immigration phenomenon directly. You know, and so when we've attempted to talk with congressional representatives about the economic policies that that create conditions for people to migrate, they're unwilling to talk about that because it's not an easy approach to the immigration phenomenon. So border enforcement, increasing border patrol agents, increasing technology and all that fits under a militarized border, is very easy and very palpable for the U.S. public. Whereas if we begin to talk about more complicated issues, such as economic policies or perhaps issues of fraud, it's not easily digestible, and people have, here in the United States, I sense at least, that a less regard to try to understand the different processes that impact migration. And so it's no surprise that, you know, there are international organizations that sort of are watching over what's happening in Mexico. But here in the U.S., I would say it tends to be relegated to the pockets that are interconnected with those groups, or perhaps those of us who do human rights advocacy might be somewhat more aware of what is happening just because of the nature of the work. But I can surely tell you that the community that I work with, people in general, the working class people that I'm in contact with, are absorbed with the situation in Mexico. There's a lot of talk in Spanish-speaking local radio around the situation, and just a lot of ambiguity as to what will be coming next in Mexican politics.
AFSC's Pedro Rios. Peace Brigades International has been working in Guerrero and Oaxaca, Mexico, as well as Chiapas, by request from human rights groups who feel they may need higher visibility when doing dangerous work. Sergi Bach is coordinator of the Mexico Project of Peace Brigades based in San Francisco. Their volunteers accompany human rights workers from Derechos Humanos and other groups who must travel under precarious circumstances. I asked Sergi to describe this effort.
I mean both physical accompaniment, which means that our volunteers are actually present in the activities that these local organizations are doing. Could be lawyers, could be indigenous leaders, campesino leaders, etc. Most of these organizations, they have offices, and then they are working in the offices, but they travel around in the state to collect evidence of human rights abuses, to pursue cases in court, to meet with the authorities, to meet with other local organizations as well. The idea is that an international presence in areas where such international presence is non-existent has a deterrent effect when it comes to attacks or threats against these organizations. The idea is to give a sign of international presence also to the government authorities. We think that we as PBI can intervene in the sense that we can legitimize the work of human rights organizations that are being increasingly delegitimized by governmental authorities.
Characterize what types of situations these human rights workers are working on that you need to accompany them for.
In Guerrero, we have a case. We accompanied the organization of Indigenous Peoples, MEPA. We accompany the members of the organization because they were denouncing a case of the rape of two indigenous women that were raped by military in the area of Ayutla. They provided translation services from the indigenous Mepal language to Spanish, and also they denounced this situation, and together with another organization, they brought up the case against these militaries that they raped these two indigenous women. So because of that, they received death threats, anonymous death threats. They are being followed and harassed, etc. So this case is a very symbolic case of the impunity of the military in many areas that are highly militarized, especially areas with indigenous communities. And that what is an astonishing feature of Mexican legal system is that such a case would be judged in a military court under the framework of disciplinary misbehavior of military personnel. So, I mean, this would not be labeled as a human rights violation. I mean, this doesn't go to a civil court. It stays in a military court, like raping two indigenous women. So this can more or less, make you, understand the type of situations that are very sensitive to denounce and to follow up. And this, we are talking about the case of 2002, if I am correct right now. So these are cases that take a lot of time, and that most of the time what would happen is that no one would actually bring such a case to court, because it's also very easy to buy the silence of people that has been abused. So we as peace brigades try to provide security for these activists, that they have, so that they have the courage to pursue the cases. And of course, this doesn't guarantee them that no one would threaten them anymore, that no one would follow them anymore, etc. But they feel that they are accompanied by an international organization with people that care about the cases, and with an organization that can guarantee them that in case something would happen to them, we would make a case internationally.
Sergi Bach of Peace Brigades International. That's it for Sprouts, a weekly program distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. We heard from FSRN's Shannon Young in Oaxaca, Mexico. You can learn more about Mexico by listening to FSRN's regular news and logging on to fsrn.org. We reached Pedro Rios at AFSC in San Diego, afsc.org, and Sergi Bach, director of the Mexico Project of Peace Brigades International in San Francisco, peacebrigades.org. Wardelio Romero is coordinator of the Binational Front of Indigenous Organizations. We reached her in L.A. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact Air Traffic Controller Ursula Rudenberg, that's U-R-S-U-L-A, at pacifica.org. I'm your producer and host, Dori Smith. See you next week on Sprouts.